Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 27 for June 8th, 2007. Touch the Surface. Time to talk about the wacky world of Windows with our Windows Whackmeister. No, that's not a good name. Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Hey, Paul. I'm doing the intro next week.
He's the Whackmeister.
The
Whackmeister. Yeah, we should work on that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay. It's okay.
Sometimes, you know, these are ad-libbed, and sometimes there's more ad than lib.
They're not all home runs, but
not all home runs.
We always swing for the fence.
That exactly. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I was in your neck of the woods just a few days ago. That's why we didn't have a show last week. I was in Connecticut for my college reunion.
I heard your car speeding by.
Hey, there's Denim. That's where Thurrott lives. See ya. I tossed out an Narragansett beer can as I went by.
Yeah. So, well, you wouldn't stand out in any way by doing that.
I guess not. I like the Mass Turnpike, though. I told my daughter, I said, oh, we're on the Mass Turnpike. The logo is a pilgrim's hat. And then for some reason, with an arrow through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
that's politically correct.
Well, and then they've changed it. They took the arrow out.
Oh, did they?
There's one with just a pilgrim hat. So I wasn't hallucinating.
It's the great PC jihad is sweeping through Massachusetts. You know, my town's high school mascot is the Marauder. And, of course, they're getting rid of that because it's sort of an Indian theme thing. So I recommended the artichoke as a kind of a peaceful.
Here in Santa Cruz, it's the banana slug.
Yeah. Oh,
that'll really get your team
going. scares the opponents. Yeah.
Go, slugs. I'll be with you in a moment. Yeah. The Marauder. So there was an arrow through that hat at one time.
Oh, yeah.
Abby thought I was loony because she said, no, Dad, look, see? And it was just a pilgrim hat, and I was so bummed. All right. I am vindicated. I think that's the best logo ever. I love that logo. And it was a little, we had some thunderstorms, but the sun came out, a little muggy, but still nice. And then it poured rain on Monday. I was showing her Havid, because I think, you know, she should see Havid, and it was raining cats
like,
and dogs.
Havid, what is
this? Where's Havid?
Oh, I see.
Havid. So let's talk about while we were gone, Microsoft did an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. They released a Pong table, which is great.
Exactly.
I think that's something we all need. It's the Surface.
That's what I wrote in my news article. I said there hasn't been a computerized table this exciting since Atari put Pac-Man on a table.
Yeah. It looks like a Pac-Man table. It's kind of coffee table height, but it's one big difference is touch.
Right.
So I haven't seen much about it. Tell us about the Surface.
Yeah, I've been amazed how much interest I've gotten in this product from readers and listeners and so forth. And
Microsoft doesn't do cool, exciting things like Apple does. So everybody says, "Oh, neat! Yeah. There's something cool and exciting from Microsoft. Something innovative."
Except that that should be your clue that this is not going to be that exciting, you know, because it is coming from Microsoft. I mean, I think we all understand that the future is going to be computerized everything, that our walls will light up with screens and we'll touch them and move things around in real time, like in that Minority Report movie and so forth.
Yeah, yeah, can't wait.
It's going to happen. But, you know, Microsoft Surface 1.0, I don't think we're going to be doing too much of that stuff. I mean,
if you go to the website, microsoft.com/surface, you'll get a little flash video. There's a new way to live the digital world. A new way that feels familiar to us. A new way that acts like us. A new way that isn't new at all. This is the worst copy. Microsoft Surface.
Computers for a long time have used, you know, this sort of desktop metaphor, and it's been abstracted so much that we're sort of unclear that that's even what it was. It was supposed to represent a desk, you know. So now they're bringing the computer to the desk itself. And actually, I guess I'd say, making an old-fashioned computer with a keyboard and a mouse you know, act like a desk might be kind of silly, actually. You know,
well, it's going to be expensive for one thing. I mean, that's a big
no, but I mean, but making things computerized actually makes some sense, right? So obviously, the first gen is not going to be going home in any way. I mean, it's going to be for hotels, restaurants, you know, entertainment places, and so forth. So, I mean, you're going to see things like little slot machines and all that kind of stuff first. So. I don't look like it's going to come out this Christmas and we're all going to have computerized tables.
They've been working, at least according to Microsoft, they've been working on it since 2001. And the first prototype was 2003.
Hey, they've been working on Vista since 2001, too.
That's true. That's not saying much.
Let's not get too excited about
there,
that.
There was a very famous demo. Mm-hmm. You saw it, I'm sure, from the TED conference, Technology Entertainment Design, of this... the guys from Carnegie Mellon, where were they from? I can't remember. But it was of this great touchscreen... thing, and you were squeezing and pinching and throwing Minority Report style, and really that's the first time I'd seen anything quite like that. And now both Apple with its iPhone and Microsoft with its Surface have basically done the same thing. I think one of the reasons they're emphasizing the history of this is to avoid the accusation that they saw this video and said, oh, we could do that.
Well, and I would say that, you know, Microsoft announcing this when they did is in some ways tied to the iPhone as well, because, you know, Apple has all of these, you know, touch screen things going on and the squeezing and all that stuff. And, you know, this table does that stuff. And I think that if they had announced it even 3 months later, people would have said, oh, you guys, you know, this is an iPhone with legs.
A giant iPhone.
Yeah.
A 400-pound iPhone.
Yeah. Typical Microsoft product.
But it may, to give Microsoft some credit, it may just be this is an idea whose time has come. And that's often happens where you see these ideas appear in many places at once.
This is coming. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I have to laugh. You know, they have these media demonstrations where they show people dragging around music and, you know, pictures and all that kind of stuff. And that's all really cute. But, you know, they showed stuff like that for Vista and it never came. And I just think we need to be realistic about this. No doubt that this sort of surface computing thing is the future. But, you know, so is tablet PC, right? I mean,
Our future. Just not right now.
It's not the future in the next 10 seconds. I mean, it's years down the road.
A lot of people have bought them, but as you say, it's institutional. It's the Marriotts of the world. So really what we're going to see is it's going to be a $10,000 brochure, a hotel brochure, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, hotels already and casinos and other places like that are already spending thousands dollars on just displays that they can hang on the wall. Sometimes they just show pretty pictures just so you feel calm when you're waiting in line. You
know? Right.
Obviously that's going to be the first use for that. So I'll get excited about this when we can play, I don't want to say Pac-Man, but, you know, like a card game or actually enjoy digital media that way, you know, move things around on the table and have it play through my stereo. That's interesting. I can't wait for that. It needs to cost a lot less than $10,000.
Right.
You know, we'll see.
Is it running Vista?
Actually, I don't know.
Who knows what
it's saying? I almost said I hope not, but actually, I don't know. I don't actually.
Well, it ain't Windows CE. This was announced. Like
my table's rebooting. Jokes come so readily.
Yes, they do. You know. In fact, Vegas is used to that. How many times have you seen pictures snapped of Vegas, big Vegas signs with the blue screen of death on them?
Oh, absolutely. You know, everybody lift up their cups. I have to reboot the table. I can't get excited.
This was announced at the D conference, Walt Mossberg and the Wall Street Journal's big digital, everything digital conference, which is becoming really an event.
I know, it really is. That's an amazing coup for those guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what it is, because
I don't know what it is. Why would anyone want to go to a Wall Street Journal technology conference?
Well, and I also look at all the power Walt Mossberg wields. I mean, he really now is the most powerful guy in tech media. And I've often wondered why. And Dvorak said, well, it's very simple. These companies like Apple and Microsoft woo Walt and the Wall Street Journal because of who reads Walt and the Wall Street Journal. They want Wall Street to like and be excited about the stuff. It's all about the stock.
Yeah,
that could makes sense. And it's all about finance and investment. So that makes sense. Anyway, the big coup, and nobody's ever done this before. I wonder if they'll ever do it again. Was Walt got Steve Jobs and Bill Gates together on the same stage?
Yes, it was the death match for the ages.
Cage match, and they didn't pull out the knives, really, did they?
No, they didn't. I mean, the build up to this was so classic, especially in the Mac side. I mean, I think people expect a certain persona out of Steve Jobs because they see him at these trade shows when he's in command.
Right.
And I thought it was really interesting how different he was, A, when confronted with things, and B, when there was someone else there with him, you know, who's obviously been perhaps even more successful in some ways from on a, you know, from a sheer money-making perspective.
Well, it's funny because they said at the end, what's one thing you admire about the other guy?
Yeah.
And Gates said, which I thought very interestingly, I thought, I wish I had Steve Jobs' taste.
Yes.
Which, and this is something Jobs has always said about Bill, is that, you know, he lacks no taste. He said it very famously, in fact. In a
right
TV
about Windows
interview.
On the Revenge of the Nerds or
the Triumph of the Nerds.
Triumph of the Nerds, yeah.
I make the same mistake. It's not the movie. It's the
is it the one with the football players or the one with Robert X. Cringely? I always forget.
I can never remember. But absolutely, you know, taste. And I thought that was great. And I was waiting when they asked Jobs the same thing. What's one thing you admire about Bill Gates? To say his fat wallet.
Exactly.
But he didn't say that. I mean, once you've got 30, 40 billion, you don't. It doesn't. It's all the same.
It's right. It's just a matter of degree at that.
What did he say about Microsoft and Bill? What did he admire about him? His
well,
focus,
contrary to what everyone expected, they were very nice to each other.
Yes.
Almost the entire time. There were a couple very mild jabs, but they were good humored in nature and were well received on both sides, I thought. And they had some good laughs and all that, which I thought was nice. I mean, ultimately, it turned into kind of a nice homie sitting on the porch kind of reflection moment. And I don't know that we expected that, but I thought it was nice. But what Jobs said about Bill's biggest, I don't know, achievement or, you know, the thing he liked most about Microsoft, perhaps, was that, you know.
Sorry.
Was that a bowling alley? What was that?
Yeah, never mind. Pretend that didn't happen.
Jeez. He's playing fantasy role-playing games.
I am so sick of websites that make noise. And I was a little nervous when I went to the Surface site. Fortunately, it doesn't seem to have any audio on it. But as I often, and this, okay, so now I'm busted. I do surf while we're talking. I look up the next story and so forth.
I expect you to do that.
I looked up some site, and boy, I got noise. Anyway,
He said was, you know, Bill Gates recognized that software could be an industry, and he made that big bet on software that you know, Microsoft was the software company.
Brilliant.
And on the flip side, I thought this was fascinating. You know, he talked about how Apple, in fact, was a software company as well, and that, yes, they make hardware, but you know, the iPod essentially is software that sits on a device, that sits on your PC, that sits up in the cloud. You know, the Mac is the software that runs on the machine. Yes, it's a beautiful machine, but it's really software. The iPhone is really the software. What will make that thing successful or not will be the software.
It's a little revisionist for him to be saying that, because all of these are tied to hardware, which is where Apple makes its money.
But I think it was very calculated, because I think it shows a little bit of insight into where they're heading.
Yes.
And how they think about themselves going forward. And especially as you move the computers over to the Intel side, you know, the underlying hardware is not that differentiated anymore.
Well, it's not just where they're heading. It's where the whole world is heading. And we're going to talk about that a little later.
Absolutely.
Software really is what it's. I mean, you know, it's almost now a trite insight. Of course it's software. You know, you don't really care what processor your iPod is running. That's irrelevant.
Exactly. But what you care about is that interface, that thing that you know, are interacting with, and that is software. Yeah. You know, obviously there's a hardware component to it, but you know, the design that Apple does, it goes obviously back and forth between the hardware and the software. But you know, it is at its, you know, core software. It's very interesting. So the other thing, I think I'll just throw this out because I thought this was fascinating. They talk back to when Apple was failing about a decade ago. And Steve Jobs came back on board. He eventually ousted Gil Emilio. And he had this great quote from Gil Emilio where he said that Emilio, who was a previous CEO of Apple, said that Apple was like a ship that had a hole in the bottom and water's pouring in. And his job was to point the ship in the right direction. I just thought, what a beautiful quote. You know,
that kind of sums it up, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. So obviously, Jobs has righted the ship and
plugged the holes. By the way,
plugged the hole and worried about the direction after the hole was plugged in.
Yeah. No, I think that's actually very apt. That's exactly what was going wrong. One of the things that Bill has always been sensitive about is these Apple ads. They take pot shots at the PC. They talked a little bit about that too, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, the PC guy and you know, Gates obviously sort of alluded to the fact that this guy was like the punching bag, and maybe, you know, a lot of people have said based even on his appearance. And Jobs said, you know, that everyone likes the PC guy. I mean, you know, he has to be likable for this to work. And I think that was the closest they ever came to disagreeing on anything. But it was done, again, in a good-humored way. And actually, I think ultimately I agree with Jobs on this one. I think that the PC guy is what makes this work. And that, you know, obviously it's a marketing thing. But when you put, you know, you have this kind of likable loser, you know, who's forced to endure all of this embarrassment because he has to run Windows. It's funny. I mean, how could that not be funny?
You have to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I love that guy. I mean, it's just classic.
So. Well, and you know, and some people have said this is a flaw in the advertising. The Mac guy is so darn snarky. Nobody likes the Mac guy.
Yeah, right. He's almost like a little Steve Jobs prototype, right?
Yeah,
like,
you want to punch him in the nose.
Yeah, I don't feel that strongly about it. I mean, I think that he's very representative of the Mac. You know, I don't want to say the user base because obviously Mac users are actually all over the place. But the way that people perceive the
prototypical,
Mac, you know,
young
and hip and more concerned with the creative stuff and
the Mac
not
cult
necessarily
members.
About
Well, you know, and I think I've heard this observed a number of times. Really, Steve and Bill have more in common than they have differences.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
listen,
pioneers.
They should get together more often.
Yeah.
This could really erase a lot of misunderstandings.
I agree.
This was the nice kind of thing. And, you know, we had talked at one time about having, you know, various sort of debates, you know, on a podcast with like Mac guys and Linux guys and everything. And I think that that is the type of thing that would come out of that. But I think that that kind of conversation sometimes can be very healthy. And, you know, again, I think on the Mac side, especially, there was some expectations that Steve was going to get up there and just, you know, smack Bill around. And when they saw how deferential and nice he was to Gates, I think that was an interesting moment for a lot of people. So I think more of that would be very helpful.
Why shouldn't they like each other? I mean,
exactly.
They came up together, you know?
Sure.
Let's see. Moving on. Why are you having trouble with iTunes? You tell me you're having some issues here on your Vista.
Right,
because the last time we talked, you said it was all working.
It was. And then I started noticing that some of my podcasts were getting deleted. And I noticed this when I was syncing with the iPod because it would tell me there was a problem. And you could look at the dialog and it said, you know, this episode of this podcast cannot be found. Would you like to look for it now? And I thought that was kind of odd. And I couldn't really figure out what was going on. And then last week, Apple came out with the iTunes Plus. And so I wanted to download some albums that were in this new format so I could, you know, play with it and test it and so forth. And the first album that I downloaded, I went back to iTunes later in the day, and three of the songs were missing.
Oh.
So when it was a few podcasts, I was a little bit concerned. When it became something that I purchased, I became very concerned. I wrote Apple support, and I told them what happened. They actually allowed me to download the entire album again, so I was able to do that. Just yesterday, I downloaded two more albums, and as I did it, I decided I would back these things up immediately. So as soon as the albums were downloaded, I went into the folder. You know, you can right-click on a song, say show in Windows Explorer, show in Finder if you're on a Mac. It will open the folder where the files are. So let's say one of the albums had 11 songs. There were only 9 files in the folder, so two were missing. But they would play in iTunes. So what I discovered was that these folders, these files were in a temporary folder. They were called download.m4p, whatever the extension is. And they were just in weird places. So I could pull them into the same folder and back them up. And I had to do that for both albums. One was missing 2, the other was missing 4 songs.
So it's like an incomplete download or something.
Well, yeah, but what happens is when you, and I tested this, you shut off iTunes, reload it, those temporary folders disappear and the files are gone. And that's what happened. So now I know what happened. I don't know why it happened. I'm not sure, you know, I've backed up my music, so I have them. I haven't lost anything again, but I don't, you know,
not to quit iTunes.
The fix is to back these things up and make sure you have all of them before you quit iTunes. And then, so anyway, I guess what I'm curious, I'm going to mention this in short takes tomorrow, hopefully, in the newsletter, but I'd like, if anybody has this issue, it's on Windows Vista. I don't know if that's relevant. I don't know if it's just my system. I have searched for this, but I'm just curious if anyone has had this problem, and if they have any ideas about...
Do you have a feedback place people could go? I mean, do you want email, or do you have somewhere on the Win Super site?
Yeah, email would be fine.
Okay.
Email would be fine.
And your email is?
Right. it's my last name, which I'll spell at gmail.com. So it's Thurott, Thurott, at gmail.com. And I'm just curious if anyone has this issue. So I've moved all my music, all my videos and movies and so forth over to Vista from the Mac. And now I'm having this weird
problem.
You're
sorry.
Yeah, it's a little disconcerting.
Yeah,
to lose things like that. So
it is weird. Although I think if it were a widespread problem, we'd hear about it.
I would think so. Yeah, and I, again, I'm not a complete idiot. I did look for this online. No. Not completely. I'm working on that. But, I don't really see anything that's relevant to what I've seen. So I don't know.
Well, since you've admitted to being a complete idiot, I'm sorry. Others others certainly feel that from time to time, and I have to come leap to your defense because you're not. In fact, you're one of the reasons I'm thrilled to do this with you is you're very credible and you're honest, and you talk about your real opinion, and often you're very positive about Macs, which gets all your Windows fans upset, and then when you say something negative or positive about Windows, all the Mac people come at you as if you're some sort of bigot, which you're not.
Right.
Most recently, this controversy over 1 million Zunes.
I know. I love that this is my controversy.
It isn't your controversy. And pointed this out. Somebody came up on, I think on Mac Break Weekly, that the AP reported this. It was reported everywhere as 1 million Zunes sold. And I'm sure that's what you saw is the news story.
Well, what I read was the San Francisco Chronicle news story.
Right.
That said that the quoted Robbie Bach, who is a vice president of some caliber at Microsoft. He's in charge of all of their entertainment stuff, I believe, at least certainly in charge of the Zune. And he said, or was quoted, I should say, in the Chronicle article as saying, "We have sold 1 million Zunes." So I blogged this. I didn't write a news story about it. I blogged it on my personal blog, and I said, hey, everybody, myself included, is very quick to make fun of this guy, of the Zune. But I said, they said that they wanted to sell 1 million of these by the end of June. They've apparently done it by the end of May. That's a month early. Good for them. I mean, maybe it's not a complete, car crash, like I've been saying. At least give them credit for that.
Well, you don't dare give credit to Microsoft for anything.
Yeah. Right. So it turns out that he did not say that they had sold 1 million Zunes. There's a podcast of the interview that the Chronicle had with him. Now, it's
the
still
Chronicle
not clear
misquoted
to me.
Him, it sounds like.
I think so. But as I noted in my follow-up post, it's not actually clear if that quote that was in the newspaper article was from a different time or a different conversation. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I don't think it matters. But I guess if you listen to the podcast... I went back and listened to it after I got some email about it. He actually says we're on track to sell 1 million Zunes by the end of June, as we said we would do. So, they have not sold 1 million Zunes. They've sold something like, 850 or 900,000 Zunes or whatever it is. Who knows? They're just on track. They haven't done it ahead of time, but they still feel like they're going to make it.
Well, and the other thing to point out is that Microsoft traditionally reports numbers of Zunes sold into the channel, not to end users.
Hey, whatever.
So how many they've sewn to real people.
Right. But that's how they measure those things. To me, whatever. I mean, that's all I did was take a quote that someone published in a pretty, credible newspaper, and I quoted it, and I said, that's interesting. Good for them.
Yeah, but it's a lot easier to take pot shots at you than the San Francisco Chronicle, or maybe a lot more fun.
I guess so. Yeah, I don't know. So,
just to clear, you corrected it. The mistake was the Chronicle's.
Oh no, I didn't correct it.
There wasn't anything to correct.
I made a follow up post, and I said
followed up. All right.
Apparently, the San Francisco Chronicle misquoted him.
Right.
Then I said, apparently someone also listened to the actual podcast with this guy and discovered the discrepancy. Now, I didn't listen to it because I've heard this guy talk before and I don't like listening to him talk. He's physically painful to listen to, and you should listen to it if you want to understand what I'm saying. He has a really he talks like he's got marbles in his mouth. He's hard to listen to.
Okay.
But I did get a couple of Mac guys asking me or demanding me, as I wrote, to retract my blog post right. about this, you know, as if I had not done some sort of journalistic due diligence, you know, for what is actually just a blog posting. So, okay, you know, so I mentioned this, whatever. I mean, to me, this is like complete non-event.
Okay.
And maybe I'm missing the point.
No, it is a non-event. And I think that that's just an example of people taking, for some reason, really, you're a lightning rod for this kind of
stuff. And I don't know why. I really don't know why. I mean, I'm not sort of, you know, smirking over here saying, oh, I don't know why, and rubbing my hands together. Because, like, I really do know why. I mean, well, I really don't know.
That's more like Dvorak.
I really am not seeking. I'm not.
You don't want this kind of publicity.
I don't have, like, you know, the deer in the Far Side cartoon that has the bummer of a birthmark. He's got like a target on his chest. You know,
bad.
I'm not interested in that.
So let's talk then about the news story, because they actually sold more Zunes, even if you're conservative, mm-hmm. than Apple did in the same period. The original iPod.
Yeah, and by the way, one of my big pet peeves in life and in the tech industry, part of my life as well, is the sort of rewriting of history that goes on. And there is absolutely no doubt that the iPod is an amazing smash success story. It is, you know, the Walkman of this generation. It's astonishing. However, you know, in the first 2 years that thing was in the market, it didn't go anywhere.
Right.
And people don't seem to remember that. And
right.
you can sort of excuse that away. It was only available on the Mac, which it was. You know, there was only one model, which was expensive for the day, which it was. The market was smaller, I guess, which it was. You know, okay, that's all very true. But the truth is also that, you know, that thing didn't really take off till A, they brought it to Windows, and B, they introduced the iTunes Music Store.
Right.
And those were the two catalysts. They happened, I believe, simultaneously or near simultaneously. And after that point, the iPod took off.
Do you think the Zune's a success? I'm surprised, frankly, to hear. I'm really shocked to hear it sold that many units, because I don't see anybody with one.
Right. I don't know. So I would say it like this. Compared to the sales of the iPod, it's not doing anything. It's, you know, Apple
sold 25 million iPods
in that time period. Right. There you go. So they're outselling Zune 25-1. Now, I don't know how many of the 30 gig version of the iPod that they sold, but several million at least, and maybe 10 million. I mean, you know, who knows? So they're outselling the Zune dramatically. However, as David Calton told me, and might have told us in our conversation, Microsoft has entered a market in which it had no product, and it is now the number two player. I mean, just by entering the market, they're outselling every other device that isn't an iPod. In that sense, in some ways, it's successful. But I would also point out, with my lack of innovation in the Linux space theme, that by copying Apple's, you know, the way that they do things with the iPod, and not going through their traditional sales strategy, or not inventing something new, they're not being particularly innovative either. So, I mean, riding the back of the iPod and achieving 1/25 of the sales, I can't really call that successful either.
Right.
So I guess we'll see. You know, they need more models. They need, you know, better. If they could buy songs wirelessly over this thing, that would be really interesting.
Let's see what they do with it. I mean, it's a version 1.0 product. Let's see what 2.0 looks like. The iPod wasn't very compelling when it was 5 gigabytes. You know, I mean, I have one, but I still have that one. But, you know, I think it takes a little while. Yeah, it takes a little while to catch on and to figure out what you're going to do with it and to do something new and different.
I think that, you know, the original iPod was really interesting. It was probably more interesting to people who had never seen, like, a Creative Nomad, you know, which was like a CD player sized device with a hard drive and a very similar menu system, et cetera. They only sold like 8 of them. So, you know, I guess who cares at this point, but, I thought I was excited by the original iPod, and I could see, you know, the small form factor and
there was something sexy about it, I think.
Yeah, that mechanical click wheel they had at the time was really neat. Yeah. You could tell it was going to go somewhere.
Yeah. Something we've both been saying, where's it going and why isn't it going farther and faster, is Windows Live. I think we're both fans of Windows Live.
Yeah.
Now they're using it for gaming now too.
So there's two sides to this, right? There's the games, and then there's the stuff that's, you know, still on Windows. So there's been some news in that area, you know, this past couple of weeks. I've spent an amazing amount of time over the past 2 days playing Halo 2.
Congratulations. You beat the game, I hear.
I did beat the game again. But the only reason that's interesting is because this time it's on Windows. And it's the first, or one of the first, I should say, Windows games that is locked into that live system. You know, so it's the same online service that you access on the Xbox that they call Xbox Live. On the micro, the Windows side, they call it Games for Windows Live.
Mm-hmm.
You might think of the, you know, the overall service itself just as Live, you know, whatever. So you can actually play Halo 2 on Windows with an Xbox controller and get achievements like you do in an Xbox game. And this thing coughs up achievements like a Pez dispenser. It's hilarious.
It's a little harder on the Xbox.
Yeah, and this, well, the original Xbox version was not, you know, predated the 360, so it doesn't have any achievements. So
well,
if like
general Xbox the 360 games, you don't get. I mean, you have all these achievements. I have like two achievements.
Yeah, some of them are very hard, and some are easier. But I have never seen a game cough up achievements like this. It's it's laughter inducing.
I think that's smart.
I got something like 7 achievements one day, and then. My son came in, and he's dying to play this thing online, you know, and I said, okay, here, get on, go ahead. He gets online, and in 2 games, gets 8 achievements, you know, and it's for everything. You know, you stuck someone with a grenade, you double kill.
Achievement.
It's like bing, bing, bing. It's like a pinball machine.
Well, why not? Achievements are cheap and easy. Are you saying it's devaluing the achievement economy?
Well, for people who are... what I would call achievement whores. Halo 2 is like the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Need it because I'll tell you what, I ain't got no achievements. I am very low and people laugh.
This would be a good one. On the flip side, I find this really amazing. This was true of the original Halo, which also came out on the PC years ago. Halo 2 has a huge hardware requirements and I have a really, a pretty high end PC except for the video card. I'd say, the video card is kind of a mainstream, mid-level, you know, 3D graphics card. Everything else is pretty high-end. I've got 4 gigs of RAM and a thing, huge screen and really fast hard drive, et cetera. But, man, I have to really tone down the graphics
really?
On this thing to get it
wow.
to acceptably. And that was true of the original Halo 2. And it's weird because Halo 2 runs on an old Xbox, which is the equivalent of, you know, it's a Pentium 3 processor. I want to say the thing is like 256 megs of RAM or something silly like that. Really old-fashioned NVIDIA graphics processor now. And obviously this thing runs fine on that. And you get it on this big honking PC and it really slows down. But, you know, I scaled everything down so that it would run full speed. And, it's neat. Now, you can't play against people on the Xbox, which is what you want.
I thought that was the point of it.
No, there are certain games now coming out, and only a few this year, but there's a game out now called Shadowrun, which I also picked up. Shadowrun is really interesting because there's a version for the Xbox 360, there's a version for Windows. If you have both, like I did to test it, you know, if you get an achievement in one, it reflects on the other. So in other words, you could get an achievement playing on the PC, turn off the PC, get on the Xbox 360, another achievement.
Okay.
Yeah, they all, as long as you logged in with the same account, it all goes toward, you know, there's only one Shadowrun entry. There's not two entries for the two different versions. But the other thing you can do is play against each other online. So I did this with my son locally. I haven't done this on the internet yet because Shadowrun is actually a complex game. It's a shooter like Halo, but there's magic and tech and all the stuff you can do.
That sounds good.
It's pretty good. But we did it locally. So you can, they have computer control players. You do like a team deathmatch. And I was on the Windows PC. My son was on the Xbox 360. It worked seamlessly. It was virtually identical on both sides.
Wow!
And that's a neat little look at the future too. So, I don't know. You know, I think the only problem is right now, Games for Windows Live is not as pervasive on the PC as it is on the Xbox 360. And the only way you can access this stuff is to go into a compatible game. You know, you can't access your stuff, you know, externally to a game, which would be nice because you know, you can do things like, you know, create a picture on the Xbox, you know, do video chatting or download TV shows and movies and things like that. All that stuff isn't on Windows. So right now it's really just the basics.
Windows,
we'll get there.
So when they say Windows Live in this context, it's more like the Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And when they say Windows Live in the context of the web, so are they? I'm confused. Are they unrelated?
No, they're completely related, and it is confusing because obviously when Xbox Live was created, there was no notion of Windows Live, so they're sort of retrofitting things in. So Xbox Live came first. It was just a gaming service. Now there's some multimedia stuff going on there too. You know, obviously you can download movies and TV shows. Windows Live took over for what used to be MSN, and you have things like their Hotmail product, Windows Live Messenger, the instant messaging product, and so forth. So on the Windows side, you have this Windows Live thing, you know, this set of services and products. They decided to combine all this into a sort of an Uber service that they're just calling Live now, all capital letters.
Live.
It's, yeah.
Live and from Redmond. It's
not quite there yet.
Not quite there yet.
it's almost live. Anyway,
hopes for it. I mean, we've talked about this before. I just like the idea, but it does. And, you know, there's a lot of promise and a lot of cool little. It's kind of their labs, too, really.
Yeah, right, right. It's kind of their Google, if you want to think about it that way. I mean, you know, they maybe too often have many things very much like Google. But, you know, some of this stuff is very good. They ship that Windows Live Mail client, which is the replacement for Outlook Express and Windows Mail. And it's actually really good. And, you know, it integrates really nicely with,
so you would download that and use it on Vista or
Windows, Windows XP, I believe Service Pack 2 and Vista. It does replace Vista Mail. So it's actually a better client. You know, it works with, webmail. It does RSS. It's nice looking, you know, they've got this sort of, Windows Live UI thing that's going on now. You can, choose different color schemes and all that stuff.
Oh, that's neat.
But again, you know, in the same vein, they need to, they're kind of hitting the basics, but they're not really integrating it. You know, if I go into Windows Live Mail and I say, I really like the black color scheme, I should get that same color scheme on any Windows Live service that I access. My Messenger should turn that color if I want it to, you know.
Right.
When I go to Live Search, it should be black. You know, everything I do should be, you know, integrated like that. And they're not. You know, and I think they'll get there, but
so right now it's just a kind of a salad, a tossed salad of different technologies.
Really is, yeah.
They don't integrate quite as nicely as they should.
Yeah, some do, some don't. Yeah.
Sounds like it's worth downloading the mail program though.
If you're using Windows Mail for some reason, and God help you, or Outlook Express, and
really God help you then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. You need to get this. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Right.
If you're just doing internet-based email, in other words, you have no reason for Outlook for whatever reason, or you don't have Outlook, this is something to look at. It's free. There are no ads. It's very attractive looking. It's very functional. It works very well. I like it a lot. I like it. You know, and I've never really liked the Outlook Express stuff too much. But this one's nice, and this is the one they're going to push going forward. So this will be their mail client, you know, for consumers and individuals going forward.
Cool.
Yeah, it's good.
Windows Mail Live, I'm making a note to download that because I don't use Outlook particularly on the... I like to look at the clients that my audience on the radio show, for instance, will be using. And that's, you know, they use Outlook Express, unfortunately. And so anything that makes that better is good.
Oh, jeez. I mean, we can't get people off of Outlook Express quickly enough.
Oh, you know, it's just a nightmare. Now, people are, though, I have to say, even new users, basic users, and almost all young users are now using online, are using webmail.
Right.
They're using Yahoo Mail or Hotmail or Google Mail. Mm-hmm. They did update the Hotmail interface, too.
They did. And
so
actually,
is it the same
that's
as the Windows Live interface now?
Actually, they're pretty similar. So if you're used to using Hotmail, the new version online, switching to this will be almost seamless because they're very, very similar.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And that's really the trend. As we said earlier, when we were talking about Jobs and his understanding that he's a software company as much as a hardware company, it really is moving that way. And that's thanks to the internet. I think that this isn't the end of applications on the desktop, not only looking like web-based applications, but maybe even being web-based applications.
Yeah. And actually, I don't believe that I've written this down anywhere yet. This is something that's been going through my head a lot lately, which is, with that in mind, if you look at traditional software companies like Microsoft and you look at this new world of web-based applications, those traditional software companies are not doing a good job at all of addressing this, what is obviously a sea change in the way that people access, you know, computer-based services, right? And companies like Google and
Google
and maybe,
gets it. There's no question.
Google obviously gets it. Yeah.
Well, they don't sell an operating system and they don't sell hardware, so that's the only way they can participate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When there's no legacy to worry about, moving to this new paradigm is much easier. And I just think it's a fascinating trend. I mean, you and I were talking earlier about a guy who was really excited about this virtualization software that's available now for the Mac. We can run Windows and Mac side by side, you know, semi-seamlessly, and how exciting that was. And I just look at that and I think, you know, okay, I understand why people on the Mac need that, but that's almost so passe because we're moving into this era now where that operating system may not matter anymore.
I've waited for this for a long time. This is the way it should be. Nobody choose. Well, maybe the nerds did. We used to choose an operating system, but really, we're choosing applications. We're choosing to get something done. We're trying to, you know, do something.
Yes,
that's why we.
Right. I mean, as a tech enthusiast, you know, and as a kid, I, you know, had various Commodore computers and an Amiga, and I had a 2GS and all kinds of different systems, but. In the years before the internet, I know that I spent hours and hours and hours in front of a computer.
Right.
And I'm not joking when I tell you I have no idea what I was doing.
Because yeah. it was just a big old calculator.
Yeah, I mean, what could you do? It's funny. Computer, obviously, computers are very useful on their own. But if you're not connected to the rest of the world, I mean, you're just kind of spinning your wheels.
That's a really good point. What were we? Like, we were playing games.
We were playing games.
Spreadsheets, I guess.
I have these memories of setting up Mandelbrot, what do you call those things? You
know,
the
fractals, yeah.
The fractal things to, in overnight, you know, this thing would run and then the picture would come out.
Pretty.
Like, and you can generate those things. That's like a screensaver now.
You know? You don't have to. It's true. I think maybe that the passion for tweaking computers comes from those days because there wasn't much else you could do. So you spent a lot of time making it work right, making it look different, you know, getting your desktop to look like something else.
Now I think it's more convenient. I mean, how you want to be able to go if you had to go in a computer cafe, if you were on a trip, or if you had a laptop.
You want to look like everybody else. Yeah.
Well, you can get in there and get your stuff because it's online.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe going away on a vacation, you want to check your email very quickly. You know, if it's already online, who cares? You know, you don't have to have your laptop with your email client on it. You can do that from anywhere.
So have you played much with Google Gears? Because that's kind of the point of it, I think, is... To convert,
desktop
apps to web apps.
Well, I've played with it in the sense that it's available for Google Reader, which is their kind of like an RSS aggregator, a web-based service. It's a web page. And what Google Gears does is allow you to use these web-based applications like, you know, Gmail and Google Calendar and Google Reader. Eventually, all of those will be available. Offline as well as online, because, you know, as I think it was one of the Google CEO or somebody who said, you know, we discovered that a lot of our users actually aren't always online. You know, sometimes they have to get on a plane.
That's
or something.
Exactly right. That's the negative that keeps coming up for me is, well, what if you're on a plane or not online?
Right. Because it's nice to be able to triage email or whatever, regardless of where you are. Maybe you're sitting in an airport, you know, whatever it is. You don't have to be on the plane. I mean,
right.
But. So what they've done is they've created this technology that will allow themselves and others, they're open sourcing it so people can extend it and work on it, make it better, apply it to their own applications. You can use these things like Gmail eventually offline. So you would navigate around the Gmail site. You would create new mails, answer emails, you know, delete emails, you know, label them, whatever you want to do. Obviously, nothing that you send would send unless you were online. But once you get back online, these things will all synchronize back up again.
Now, the impression
impression
I got with Google Gears also is that it has an open API, so other developers could use the same technology for their applications.
Yeah, that's absolutely the point of it. And even Microsoft could use it. I mean, if this thing worked out, you know, if this was the answer, and by the way, if this works, and I like I said, I downloaded it. To look at it, you know, you can download the little client and then you can use Google Reader offline. And I actually do use Google Reader. So I was able to look at that and, you know, I guess it works. I mean, Google Reader is very simple because all it's doing is downloading things, allowing you to read them. So it's sort of caching it, you know, it's not like email where you reply or, you know, whatever, but you can move things around. You can organize it the way you want, and this thing will synchronize back up with the web when you're done. So that is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, that solves the problem and gives you best of both worlds. Do you have to write a desktop application? Like, would I have to write Google have to write a Google Calendar application for the desktop, or does it somehow?
No, that's the point. The point is you would access it from
it
the web.
It just saves it.
It's basically cached, I guess, is the way you would think of it. So
that's
in the same
slick.
Way that, yeah, your email is sitting there if you're using Outlook, even when you're offline, and you can sit there and reply to emails and read them and mark them as read and all that stuff. You know, this is sort of a supposition here. This is what they're saying is they're going to do that to the web client for Gmail, for example. They specifically use that as an example, a Google Calendar. They're going to look at, you know, docs and spreadsheets. They've got a presentation app coming out as well. And if this works, if it works as advertised, sort of like Microsoft Surface, if it really comes, you know, full circle,
the world will be a new place.
Well, it will. I mean, that might be the final nail in the coffin of desktop applications of some types. Right. You know, I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a slow process. Obviously, the Photoshops of the world, the video editors, video games, you know, things like that. I mean, it will be more efficient for the foreseeable future for you to have a desktop application, you know, for those things. But increasingly, I mean, for a lot of people, you know, people who are not like us.
We don't
need
high-end, super fast.
People, the computer is a tool.
Right.
That is not the reason you're using it is not because it's a computer. It's because you need email and the web
to get stuff done. A lot of people say, oh, you know, I have to use Google spreadsheet is no good. I couldn't possibly use it. I have to use Excel. But, you know, sure. I don't see people using, you know, 95% of Excel doesn't get used. I mean, maybe there are a few things that you need that aren't in Google spreadsheet, but I think it has, there's a lot of very simple uses for a spreadsheet. Most of the ones I do.
And that's 99% of the people out there.
That's most people, and it works fine.
Not about it. Yeah. I know that for me, personally, as a writer, I have to use Microsoft Word because there are certain features that are just in there. I literally can't even use something like WordPerfect. I mean, it has to be Word. Part of it is because I do a lot of work through the magazine, and we do, you know, use the editing features to do revisions and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, as a writer, you know, I need that. People who are not writers, which I think are most people, might not need that stuff. And maybe Google Docs or some web-based, you know, service or whatever, or something much more lightweight and portable than Word would be fine for those people. And I think that's where we're heading. So. It's interesting. I mean, this whole trend is very, very interesting to me.
Well, I'm installing Google Gears in Firefox right now. We'll see what it does for me.
Yeah. Well, what you'll notice is not much, right? Because it will just work. You know,
I like
it. Well, assuming you use, you know.
I do use Google Mail and I use Google Spreadsheets.
Well, but that stuff, it's not there yet. That's what I'm saying.
It's only there right now for the reader.
It's only there for readers. Yeah. So that's what you'll have to test.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting you don't use Reader. Okay, so just subscribe. You can subscribe to a couple of RSS
feeds. Using it. Yeah. Well, I use the Google front page, and that I guess that's a portal to Google Reader.
I think. Yeah. So if this works, I this is the game changer.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. And Surface.
Same thing. if it works. It's not a game. I think we all saw that one coming. I don't know that anyone saw this coming in this particular way.
Paul Thurrott's blog is online. It's if you want to write a critique.
If you want to complain about my use of quoting the San Francisco Chronicle, please send me an email.
And has the Chronicle, by the way, been attacked in any way? No, I don't think so.
Who cares? I don't even know. I believe only I have been attacked for quoting them.
It's just you.
Accurately.
Paul has, by the way, 11,810 achievements, so he's really going places. You can find out more at internet-nexus.com. He'll be going pro any day now. He also runs the Supersite for Windows, which is a great resource, especially for Vista users, at winsupersite.com. And his new book is a must for Windows Vista users, Vista Secrets. Windows Vista Secrets, available on Amazon. Just go to his website. Click that link there because you get a great price at internet-nexus.com. And we'll catch up with you. Actually, I don't know if it'll be next week because I'm going to be in Vancouver. But I'll try because I hate to miss shows like this. But right. We'll certainly catch up soon and find out what's going on in the wacky world of Windows. What did I call this? What did I call you? The
Whackmeister.
Whackmeister.
Which I'm adding to my business card as we speak.
Hey, thank you, Paul. And we'll talk again next time. Sure.